is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion and delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Ron Brown. And Ron is in the gold and silver business. He supports Radio Liberty, and we certainly support him. We think he does a great job with our listeners, and certainly everyone is very, very praiseworthy of the work that he does for them. And right now, of course, we are facing the greatest financial catastrophe of my lifetime. Well, other than the Great Depression, I lived through that. That was a long time ago, and of course, I was just a small child, and we lived in a house that my parents had bought for $3,000, and my dad was making $100 a month. That was his salary. But today, of course, things are different. Salaries are much higher than that, although who knows what the future will bring. We find so many of the major financial institutions of the United States and the world are really in very, very real problems. I was just reading where Merrill Lynch, which is the largest brokerage house in the United States, has lost $41 billion. That's billion dollars in the last year, and many of our other major banks, UBS, the largest, third largest bank in the world, had lost about almost $40 billion and was sitting on another $70 billion in possible bad loans. There are about $700 billion of deposits from American investors. Isn't that bank which has? They're working very closely with the Securities and Exchange Commission and the IRS to identify people who have European bank accounts, and there are going to be a lot of difficult problems as certainly the Swiss banking laws dissipated and the tradition of Swiss banking suddenly becomes a remembrance of things past. Well, certainly we've seen Bear Stearns go down. We've seen Fannie Mae having real problems, Freddie Mac having real problems, the collapse last week of Indy Mac, and the fact that the government's doing everything they can to prevent Washington Mutual, that's WaMu, from going down. They've got some of the other large banks to buy up some of their certificates, collateralized debt obligations. We seen last week the market dropping, the price of oil going up, and suddenly this week, the price of oil is dropping and the market is going up. And what's really going on, Ron? Why are all these things happening? I thought that we were in a decline, and yet suddenly the market's just going right on up here this week.
Well, of course, we know we have the plunge protection team. And then, of course, when you look at the price of gold and silver, there's technical points that once they're broken would trigger a whole new psychology of the markets. And that's where we were getting. If you'll remember, back in March of this year, gold had reached $1,033 an ounce, and silver had surpassed $21 an ounce. Looked like they were ready to break and run to the upside, and of course, that's when they came in. You could almost hear the bugles blowing as the cavalry came in to beat the markets back down. They got silver down into, $16, $17 range. Gold went all the way down to about 840 or maybe a little below that. So here we were over the last two or three months starting to recover. Gold was at 990, ready to break through that 1,000, and silver was at 1955, ready to break out. And most of the analysts are saying that when it breaks through those two resistance levels, we're going to go into that runaway market like we had back in late 79, 80. So obviously, that would be a point where the powers to be would do their best to make sure it doesn't get through there, and I think that's exactly what we saw.
And I think we have to realize the reason the price of oil went up is because they manipulated it up. The price of oil is going down because they manipulated it down.
That's absolutely. There's all sorts of speculation going, and of course, right now, I think we're approaching critical mass in these markets. I'm seeing it with my clients. You know, I'm having I had a client call me this afternoon, for example, and say, I just want to get all my money out of the bank, and what should I do with it? And so I'm starting to see more and more calls like that. So when you see something like the IndyMac Bank go under, then the next day you hear them talking about bailing out Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and the experts are saying that could be $1 to $5 trillion that they're responsible for. And then you hear all the troubles at the different brokerage firms. You mentioned UBS. I have a client that's high up with UBS, and he said it's going to be 100 years before UBS can restore the Swiss banking reputation as being, you know, reputable dealers. So there's so many companies out there and banks and brokerage firms that are on the ropes. I think people are getting very, very nervous. And, of course, when people lose confidence in a confidence game, that becomes a real problem.
No, certainly it does. And I think it's the time that people begin to understand that the financial system of the entire world is on the rocks. Now, one of the interesting things I was reading just the other day, and I'd never heard this before, it was in the Don McElveny report, and they were quoting some economist who was saying that China was accumulating silver. He said it several times. I'd never heard that before, but apparently the Chinese not only have an affinity for gold, but a very strong affinity for silver. Have you heard anything at all about that?
I've heard mention of it. Of course, it's hard to know exactly what's going on in China, but I certainly wouldn't be surprised at that at all.
Well, of course, you know, if China would just start buying silver, they could drive the price up right to the roof because there isn't that much silver that's out there, actually. There's probably far less silver that's readily available on the open market than there is gold.
You know, if any billionaire would buy a little silver, then the party would be over because there really is, you're right, there isn't much silver out there to go around, and it would just take so little. You know, if silver breaks through 21, like we were talking about, that will increase the demand. It'll, in fact, the demand will accelerate dramatically. And we're at a point when all these, I call them scams, all these paper programs to cover up the shortage of real silver. You know, you've got the Perth Mint problem where they have a liability to their pool account. Let me explain what a pool account is.
Well, why don't you hold off on that? Because you have to be bringing other stations back on board, and I just assume that our listeners out across America are hearing what you're going to see saying. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Ron Brown, certainly one of my favorite guests as we talk about what's going on financially. And I was simply commenting, I was reading in the latest McElveny report, that the Chinese were actually accumulating silver. Now, I had not heard that before. But, of course, Ron was saying, because if any large country or certainly a billionaire started accumulating silver, why, it wouldn't take long before all the silver was gone, really. There's not that much really above ground at the present time. And certainly when they established a silver exchange, why, the price went up, and then they beat it down again. And they're doing something that's really quite dishonest on the commodity markets. They're having negative shorts. In other words, they're selling silver short, and they don't have any silver behind them at all. If anybody was to go in and start taking delivery on the silver, well, the price would go right through the roof. But you were about to tell us about something about pool accounts. What's that about?
Okay, a pool account is where people invest silver with some organization, and they say, you can store my silver for me. I don't want to take delivery of it, so you store it for me. But a lot of these is what they call unallocated. You basically buy silver ounces, and you say, for giving me a break on storage fees, I will allow you to use that silver to deliver or to cash flow your operation. So silver lends itself to that because it's so cheap, and if you were a millionaire who wanted to buy $1 million worth of silver, you're talking about hundreds, if not thousands, of pounds of silver, and most people don't want to deal with that, so they try to find someone to store it for them. The Perth Mint, according to Jason Hummel in his report a few weeks ago, has a liability to their pool account of $880 million. Now, that would buy an awful lot of silver, and in my opinion, if you have that much money in a pool to hold silver to deliver on your contract or people that are purchasing, you should never have any back orders on that silver, because that's an awful lot of silver. But the word has been out that they've been discouraging people from trying to take delivery of their silver. They've been back-ordering people, so it makes you wonder if we don't have just another fractional reserve banking thing going where they don't really have all the amount of silver on hand that they're supposed to. The one that really gets my attention is the Barclays exchange-traded fund, and that's kind of like a mutual fund where people invest in the mutual fund, and the mutual fund supposedly goes out and buys the silver. In this case, you have one for gold, I'm sure you have one for copper and other things. But if the records are straight, they're supposed to have 195 million ounces of silver in that pool, in that exchange-traded fund that they're storing for people. And what I really find interesting is guess who is the custodian of the silver that's being stored.
Who is the custodian of the silver being stored?
Morgan Chase, which is the biggest shorter of silver on the COMEX. So you see that and you start to say, is there really the silver there? And, of course, I've mentioned it several times. I'm sure there's some new listeners, so I'll mention it again. The Morgan Stanley lawsuit last year, where a big investor went to him and said, I'd like some proof that the silver I'm storing with you really exists. And they wouldn't give it to him, so this individual took him to court in a class action lawsuit. And when it went to trial, it came out that not only was Morgan Stanley not buying any silver to fill those contracts, they were so arrogant, in my opinion, that they weren't even going into the futures market to hedge their risk, yet they were charging storage fees all along. So, you know, to me, that is absolute fraud.
What happened to this lawsuit, do you recall?
Well, they lost the lawsuit.
No, did they have to put up some money?
I suspect they gave them a real tough sentence, you know, saying they were an insider bank. I heard a rumor that they gave them 39 lashes with a wet noodle.
I was saying, well, that doesn't sound like a very, very severe punishment
yeah,
at all.
You know what I mean. But, see, that's just a few of these. And, by the way, what they told the judge was really interesting. They said, but, Judge, we're only doing what is standard procedure throughout the industry. So that doesn't build an awful lot of confidence in all these storage programs out there, especially the ones in the bank, by banks, because banks only know one game to play, and that's fractional reserve banking. So the question now becomes, how much silver really exists? You know, you have the books of these different organizations and storage fees or storage programs that say we've got X number of ounces of silver, but every now and then you need to go out and take a physical inventory and say, does that silver really exist? The evidence is starting to show that a lot of that silver that's being stored is not really being stored for people. So once that reality finally hits the market, if we think we had shortages, then what's going to happen now when the people wake up to the fact that even that doesn't exist? So I really believe silver is on the verge of exploding to the upside, because the next major acceleration in demand is going to bring all of those frauds, in my opinion, to the surface. And that's when things will really start to get interesting in the silver market.
Well, because the big thing is, of course, that we have rampant inflation. Why do we have rampant inflation? Because the government has been expanding the money supply. And, of course, the prices don't go up, you know, and then, of course, that produces inflation. Prices go up because you increase the money supply, you destroy the value of the currency, and that is what produces the secondary rise in prices. And we're seeing, I mean, a really dramatic rise in the price of certainly fuel, even if it were to stay right where it is now. It would still be extremely expensive for the average individual, but we're seeing the rising of the price of food. We're seeing a rising of the price of commodities. Certainly the price of iron ore actually increased 85% here about 3 weeks ago when Rio Tinto raised the price of iron ore 85%. There was no reason for it. There was no shortage of iron ore, but they raised it, and the Chinese, who were the largest his customer, went right along with it. In other words, there seems to be some sort of a collusion behind the scenes to actually really simply promote this inflation that is really going to have such a devastating effect on the people of this country. I was just reading an article about the price of home heating oil and electricity and certainly natural gas next winter, and certainly here where I live in California, you really don't worry that much about heating, or you want some heating, but in the East, I mean, this is just devastating. They're talking really about so many people are not going to be able to afford the dramatic increase in the price of heating oil and natural gas and electricity. The people are going to have a choice between eating or being warm, and they may not be able to do either one. And, of course, the conclusion was an awful lot of people are going to move from the middle class to being poor, which, of course, has always been our contention, that everything that's going on today is an organized plan to destroy the middle class and impoverish the American people. Have you heard anything about this?
Yes. Well, you know, one, the Fed, of course, which is a corrupt organization to begin with, but it is trapped between a rock and... The economy is slowing enough that people can't keep up, and everyone is getting squeezed. We've had all these bubbles to keep the game going. The subprime loan thing was just another example of how desperate they were to just keep the bubble growing. But see, now they're running out of rabbits, and once that pops, then the thing starts to implode on itself. That forces them to print money even faster, so we're fast approaching that point where they really run out of tricks.
Well, you know, it's really a fascinating time because on one hand we see the prices of homes dropping, and you know, here in California the value of homes has dropped between 20% and 30% in many areas over the last year. Prices, even where I'm living, very desirable, have decreased from almost $800,000 down to $600,000 for a home. I saw a brand new Ford pickup truck, 150 for $10,000 advertised. The price of cars and trucks and things are coming down. They're having to sell these things at a loss simply to get rid of them. And, of course, General Motors, Ford, Chrysler, all of them are really facing the possibility of bankruptcy. And we're going to may very well lose many of our major manufacturers right here in the United States. People don't understand. And then, of course, when that happens, those people are out of work. And then the people, of course, have been selling them things, the grocery stores, the department stores they shop at, they're going to be losing their jobs. We see that Starbucks is going to be closing 600 stores here across America. And Starbucks, you know, 2 years ago was one of the fastest growing corporations. Their stocks were skyrocketing. Of course, the stocks certainly of financial institutions is plummeting. Starbucks stock is plummeting. Every once in a while, the plunge protection team, known affectionately as the working group on... people to really feel or to really understand that the election is a fraud. You've got two establishment candidates, and you can vote for the candidate of their choice, not of our choice. And I mean, where's Osama getting all of his money? $52 million he raised last month. Where is the money coming from? It's coming from the establishment in one way or another. And of course, they're also funding John McCain. But I think there's some people who just like to see McCain in, and of course, if the economy is terrible, and certainly the price of oil is up, why McCain doesn't stand a chance, I think they're going to manipulate everything. We're going to go to a break. Well, give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, if you have a question. Well, Ron, go ahead. Certainly, what are you hearing from the people you're talking to? A lot of them are really getting very concerned, a little scared, and trying to get their money into something that will not lose its value.
Absolutely, Dr. Stan. People are really starting to get nervous. You know, when you see something like a big bank like that going down, and you hear the stories of a line for three blocks long trying to get in, and then you hear rumors that people aren't even getting up to. Their $100,000 FDIC, you know, guaranteed. And then people start to think about the depression of the 20s, and then you start hearing that this could trigger maybe another 100 or 150 banks, and all of a sudden, you know, that's the very thing that can trigger the implosion. Because once you start to panic, how do you stop it? You know, they're trying to print money fast enough to keep the system going, but eventually you're going to see more and more people panic. And more importantly, you know, when you take a look at, let's just take Fannie Mae. I understand China has a major, major position in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac stocks. So if they had allowed that one to go under, then obviously China wouldn't have been very happy. So. Now we have the situation where the foreigners see the beginning of the end. You know, we're wanting them to loan us more and more money every month, and yet they sit there and watch us debauching the value of our currency. So more and more of them are stepping away from the dollar. You see these, what do you call them? The
sovereign funds. Investment funds?
Well, the country funds that they're starting different countries, they'll start. They have a name for it.
They call them sovereign investment funds.
Yeah, and they're phasing out of dollars. So
sovereign wealth funds, I guess. Sovereign wealth funds.
And so, when we lose our ability as the foreigners back away from the dollar and refuse to loan us that $3 billion or whatever it is a day that we need, then that simply just forces the Fed to print the money even faster. So. As I've said many times, I know this is politically correct, but anyone that remembers the little Black Sambo story, the tiger's chasing his tail, and all you can see right now is a blur. So, you know, it's time to fix up a big batch of pancakes because the butter is on its way. This whole system is starting to melt down very, very quickly, and people that 3 months or 6 months ago thought, you know, I was crazy the way I talked. They're saying, you know, I think you're right. So there's a lot of people starting to predict the collapse of the system. You know, a lot of major international banks around the world are predicting a calamity by October.
Well, I think it's important that people understand that between 1971 and the year 2005, the Fed increased the amount of money in circulation and money in credit in circulation in the United States 12-fold. I mean, highly inflationary, and that isn't bad enough. Congressman Ron Paul, and you can go to our website at RadioLiberty.com and go to the other video section and look at the videos we have of Congressman Ron Paul. He claims that they have increased, they have actually put out $4 trillion of money here in the United States in the last 3 years. $4 trillion. You know, remember the entire debt of the United States is about $9.3 trillion, and they simply put all this money out into the circulation, trying to keep the economy going, and it's not doing a good job. The economy is faltering, despite the infusion of $4 trillion in 3 years. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Ron Brown. And if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, or suddenly you'd like to know something about what's going on today, if you're concerned about the fact that they're destroying intentionally and maliciously and purposely the value of the life savings of the average American because they really want to destroy the middle class and impoverish our people, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And of course, if you want the verification of the fact that there is a plan to impoverish our people. You only need to read the Global Biodiversity Assessment that came out of the Second Earth Summit, where they said, you know, there's so many people in the world, if we're going to have 6 million people, they're going to have to live at the level of the people of Eastern Europe. Of course, in 1995, when that was published, they were peasants there. They were totally impoverished. And of course, the other thing that is pointed out is that in the Earth Charter, they talk about equitable distribution of wealth between nations. How do you get equitable distribution of wealth when the people of America are so wealthy and the people of the rest of the world are so poor? Why, you simply impoverish the American people. So, certainly, if you're out there across America, you have any questions or comments, certainly Ron Brown's on the front lines of this. He studies this probably even a lot more than I do, because I've got to be an expert on a lot of things, and I got to know a little bit about a lot of things and an expert on none of them, whereas this is Ron's field. Well, certainly, Ron, you were mentioning that an awful lot of the people you deal with want to get into something of intrinsic value, realizing, of course, that when you begin to see the erosion, the destruction of the value of the currency, people who are wise will get out of currency into something of intrinsic value, and the foolish people will do nothing. In fact, really what I was amazed was there were thousands of people who had, deposits to the IndyMac Bank. And they actually had more than $100,000 in. And suddenly, you know, the bank goes down, and they suddenly realize they stand to lose a large part of their deposit, over $100,000. Now, these people have a fair amount of money, but, it would be rather disconcerting to wake up one morning and find out that the money you thought you had in the bank, or you had in the bank in a couple of accounts, but in the same name, why, of course, you were going to lose that. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, I think that's right. You know, it's unfortunate, and especially out in California, you've seen it more than I have, Dr. Stan. Most people don't see the truth until the horses are out of the barn. And by the time they wake up, then they're in a hole, and that's what's happened to so many people, especially in this real estate bubble. People going out and, had massive profits in their real estate. They could have just cashed it out rent it for a while or gone someplace and bought something for a lot cheaper, but they thought it would never end, so they would take their profits and parlay it into 3 or 4 spec houses, thinking this was my chance to get rich quick. And then, of course, when the bubble burst, they get behind the eight ball very, very quickly, and now people have no choice but to start walking away from their houses, and basically they're bankrupt. And it's sad to see, but I guess that's human nature.
Well, I think it's happened a dozen times during the course of our nation. And, of course, when money is evil, it's easy to get, and when interest rates are low where you can borrow all you want to, a lot of people go out and start a business or buy a farm or do all sorts of things, thinking that they're going to be able to turn their money over quickly and make a lot. And they don't understand that's not the way the game is played. The way the game is played is, we win, you lose. And when they say you, that means exactly it. You out there in the listening audience. And, of course, certainly the stock market bubble back there that burst in the year 2000, this was a typical scam. And people were they making money hand over fist. And the NASDAQ was up to $5,000. And I forgot now how high the stock market was. And when that thing turned, of course, it just collapsed. And everybody kept waiting for it to come back again, not understanding it wasn't coming back again. And many people, of course, lost their retirement, they lost their pensions, they lost everything. And then they came up with the housing bubble, and they created the housing bubble. They encouraged people to actually take out these adjustable rate mortgages and to buy homes they couldn't afford. And they could get 100% financing or 125% financing, 125% financing and nothing down, or borrow money on a second mortgage so you could put a down payment on the house and with the house as security. And then, of course, when the housing bubble burst, why, of course, it created a lot of people losing, their initial investment, and of course more and more people are going to lose it because the housing prices are continuing to fall. And of course I think that they've got a long way to go, and some people say that maybe they've only fallen halfway. In many communities in my state, why, the value of homes has fallen 25% to 30%, certainly in places all across the country where there's been rapid growth, there's been rapid fall. And whatever goes up will come down. And remember, things always fall far further than you anticipate. And I think we've got a long way to go. Give us a call here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I was saying, you know, when things go up, they always go up further than you would anticipate. But when they go down, they fall even further than you anticipate. Actually, George Soros said that. He's a pretty smart guy, so I don't hesitate quoting him. What are your thoughts on that, Rob?
Well, not only further, but a lot faster.
Right.
When the party ends, it's over very, very quickly, and you climb a wall of worry all the way in a bull market. When the bear market really hits, and you see just an implosion overnight. And, you know, Dr. Stan, you remember 5-6 years ago when the Dow Jones was near its top? This was around 2001 or so. And we were warning people about the stock market and the dot-com bubble and so forth. And yet here we were just, 6 months ago, the Dow Jones was sitting there around 12,000, which was basically where it was back in 2000 when it stopped. So a lot of people would argue, well, I haven't done so bad. I've broken even at least. But in 2001, the Dow Jones would buy something like 43 ounces of gold. Today, it'll buy less than 11 ounces of gold. So it tells you that the Dow Jones may have maintained a certain level in terms of in nominal terms, in paper terms, but in real purchasing power versus gold, which is real money, it's lost about 75% of its value. So that, you know, we warned people then that the silent crash is going to be that they would hyperinflate us out of this, and paper's prices might maintain themselves in nominal terms, but in real terms they would actually be collapsing. Of course, that's exactly what has happened.
And that's exactly what has happened. As far as the price of oil, it's not that the price of oil has gone up so much, it's the price of the value of the dollar has gone down. Now, admittedly, there's been speculation that's driven the cost of oil up, but much of the cause of the increase in the price of oil was simply the decrease of the value of the currency, and the average person doesn't understand this. And as we said before, quoting Alan Greenspan, who quoted Lenin saying, the best way to destroy a nation is to debauch the currency. And not one person in 1,000 will realize, of course, what's going on. And most people out across America, unless they listen to a program like ours, simply are unaware of the fact that there is an organized, orchestrated, coordinated effort to destroy the value of our currency. The reason we have the Federal Reserve System was to maintain a stable dollar to protect the life savings of the American people. But unfortunately, wicked people now control the Federal Reserve System, and their purpose is not to preserve the value of the dollar, but to impoverish our people, and we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, and we do have a caller on the line from Texas. But before we go on, Ron, I do want you to get out your telephone number and tell people what they'll get if they do call you.
Okay, my telephone number is 1-800-595-0561. That's 1-800-595-0561. And if you call me, and feel free to call me, because I love to talk to people, and sometimes I feel more like a teacher, because I like to try to wake people up to what's coming down. And just feel free to call me and ask me any questions you have, and I'll send you a package of information. I put out a newsletter from time to time, and I'll pick up letters from different authors that I think that are important, and I'll send you a package of information that'll get you on track to understand exactly what's happening.
All right, fine. And once again, the telephone number?
That's 1-800-595-0561.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Rick, who's calling us from Texas. And again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, Rick. How are you doing? Doing just fine.
Good.
What part of Texas are you calling from?
East Texas.
All right, fine. Go ahead.
I was wondering about silver. It keeps going on that roller coaster ride where it goes up and then it seems to go back down. And does your guest have any kind of information on when it'll probably break out for good?
Well, I could run back there in my closet and get out my crystal ball, but the last time I looked at it, it had about 3 cracks in it, but I'll try to answer your question. The nature of silver has always been more spastic than gold. It's a much thinner market. There's not as much, in terms of dollar value in the silver market versus the gold market, there's probably somewhere around 300 times the value of gold out there trading in the market versus silver. So it takes very little buying or selling to run it either way. Now, that can be either good or bad. If you're buying it in an up market, then silver goes up much, much faster than gold. In a down market, of course, it goes down much faster than gold. I happen to think we're in a raging bull market, and I think also add to that picture the fact that we've been consuming the above-ground silver now for the last 60 years, and unknown to most people, we've probably consumed 90 to 95% of all the silver that took 4,000 years of history to accumulate. So silver is poised to make an explosion, in my opinion, through $100 an ounce. But the powers to be in the banking system and in politics know that as well as I do, so they come up with all of these ways to try to manipulate the price of silver, and they've been doing it for the last 10 or 15 years. But as we discussed earlier in the program, a lot of these manipulation scams are starting to come to the surface, and as they do, then you're going to see a catch-up as silver catches up to years of being manipulated.
And what is going to happen, nobody really knows, Rick, but I think that it's going to happen sooner or later. And the other side is doing everything they can to discourage people from getting gold and silver because they don't want you to have anything to protect your currency. And you go back and you read that essay that Alan Greenspan wrote in 1966 on gold, and you can simply Google that and read it, and he will tell you that the secret of the welfare state is that they don't want you to have a means of protecting your currency. And, of course, if there was any means of protecting your currency, they'd have to make it illegal, as they did with gold in the 1930s. And, of course, they really want to impoverish the American people. This is what it's about, and you've got to simply figure a way around it. And one is certainly to have some of your wealth in silver because, of course, they have never made silver illegal, and I don't think they'd be able to. But who knows what they can do? We're dealing with organized evil and wicked people who really want to impoverish our people, and they're doing a pretty good job of it. Anything else, Rick?
Just had a question about I have to sell the smaller amounts of 90%, and most brokers don't want to mess with that. Either it's a full bag or they don't want to mess with it. Does your guest have any ideas of how to get, a decent value for...
Sure. Just call me tomorrow. In fact, I have a dealer I work with. It's right near where you are. It's in Dallas, Texas. So call me. I work with the quarter bags or even, we can work with even less than that.
Okay, Rick. Anything else?
Okay.
But if I were you, I wouldn't sell it unless you absolutely had to, because I think maybe one day you'll be sorry.
Oh, that's why I'm trying to... Believe me.
I see what you're saying. You're trying to sell as little as you can.
Yeah.
Not to sell it all at once, just parsing it off. And, of course, that's why you bought the silver to begin with, is a hedge against what's coming down and to use in case of an emergency. So, yeah, so a lot of people are having to sell a little bit because a lot of people are literally being squeezed by this economy and inflation. So feel free to give me a call tomorrow. Did you get my telephone number?
No, sir. Could you give it again, please?
And that's 1-800-595-0561.
Got that, Rick?
Yes, okay. Thanks a lot.
God bless. And our telephone number again here is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. We've got Eugene calling from Idaho. Hi, Eugene. How are you doing?
Pretty good, Dr. Stan. I love your show. Got a couple questions for Ron.
Okay, fine.
Up here in Kellogg, Idaho, supposedly we've got one of the largest silver mines in the world. It's been shut down because of the EPA and the cleanup, which also is the largest cleanup ongoing site, to my knowledge, in the United States or maybe even in the world. And I'm not sure what this has to do with the market other than are they supposedly keeping this EPA going so that they don't have to mine the silver. And the sad part of this whole thing is the community has really suffered tremendously over the years because of all the tailings and the poisonous mercury, zinc, and lead. And,
is that the fun chat room that you're talking about?
This is the Sunshine Mine, yeah.
Yeah. I really wish I could add more to it. I knew there were some troubles there. I knew they had shut them down. I've never heard any dissertation on exactly why. It could be very legit, or it could be, you know, just a...
Well,
I would just...
Yeah, they took off, to my knowledge, 18 inches of the whole town everywhere they could because they'd had so much mercury and lead in the soil that they actually closed down a school for children, an elementary school, completely shut it down and relocated it because of all the poison that was in the ground. The tailings are still there.
Yeah.
And they've actually went down the river into the Lake Coeur d'Alene and settled at the bottom of the lake in the sediment. So they know, you know, they know what's going on, but I don't know if they're purposely keeping that cleanup going so they hold the price of silver down, or does anybody really know how much silver is there? Supposedly, I've had geologists tell me that there's a lot of silver there. One of my friends went down into the mine and told me about the horrendous environment there is there. So, but I just thought I'd throw that out there because I don't know if you're aware of that mine or not.
Yeah, everyone's aware of that mine. I was aware they had shut it down. I didn't know all the details of it. I've got some clients that live in that area, and they have some people involved in the business, so I'll be glad to call and get their opinion on it. But, you know, mining is it can be a very dangerous industry, and I think they have a responsibility to do it properly. So some mines abuse that, and the environmentalists in that case have a legitimate cause, I think. And, you know, I've been against a lot of the environmental procedures because they make it so hard to get a mine going now. And I'm involved with a couple of stocks now that they've been fighting for 3-4 years just to hop through all the hoops and hurdles to prove to the world they're not going to, you know, violate any environmental issues.
But, you know, what's really so interesting, Eugene, is, of course, they're concerned about mercury, and justifiably, mercury is one of the most toxic substances known to man, and yet they're putting into the fillings of people all across America and poisoning them, and there's a relationship to autism in children and certainly to the Alzheimer's disease in the elderly, and certainly if you get have those fillings in there, why, of course, your increased incidence of Alzheimer's disease, if you take the influenza shots that they urge elderly people to take, which really don't do any good, but they do a tremendous amount of harm because the mercury load that they're giving these people, elderly people, every year increases the incidence of Alzheimer's disease. So there's tremendous hypocrisy on the part of the Environmental Protection Agency. And certainly the people who work for the Environmental Protection Agency realize that and try to get the information out, but because of the degree of control over the media, you're never going to hear about it. So anything else you want to say, Eugene?
Well, I just feel really bad for that community up there. It suffered over the years, and I think they might be keeping that mine closed because it's so deep now that they may have to have technology to get that silver out. I don't know. I heard rumors that they can't have a human being down that deep in that kind of environment anymore. So might be part of it. That might be part of the reason they're keeping it closed.
Yeah. Who knows? Or maybe they just don't want any more silver out there. Who knows? Or maybe, Chris, what they usually will do, and they will use the government agencies to plague people and to plague corporations and mines, and then when the people finally get discouraged and they sell, then immediately, of course, the new owner gets a clearance from the Environmental Protection Agency and goes right on with what they were doing. So this is how the scam is played, and they use the government to force people to sell so that their friends can buy. Anything else, Eugene, before we let you go?
God bless you, Dr. Stan, and you're doing a wonderful job. I love your show.
God bless, and thanks very much. I appreciate the words of encouragement. Okay, well, I've been helping people to have have secret offshore accounts, and now the government is out to get them. Of course, you are required by law, if you have an overseas account, to report it to the Internal Revenue Service, and for whatever reason, some people just don't trust the Internal Revenue Service. They think the government might actually try to steal their money, and so that they've had secret accounts, and now, of course, the government's forcing the Union Bank of Switzerland to come clean and tell us, because Union Bank has branches here in the United States. They have to abide by U.S. laws. Now, other Swiss banks don't, but the Union Bank does. And now, of course, there's going to be an awful lot of people who thought they had Swiss banks, secret Swiss accounts, and maybe they were perfectly legitimate. Maybe they were not avoiding money, but paying their taxes on it. But now the government's going to go after them, because nobody can have a secret account except for the elite, and they've got secret accounts all over the world. Right, go ahead. Do you have any thoughts on that, Braun?
Yeah, in fact, the person I was talking about said it's getting so bad they may see UBS try to just sell out and get totally out of this country, to avoid some of the harassment they're going to get and maybe protect some of their clients. And, of course, that might be a little too late to do that. But it's interesting the way this thing is coming down, isn't it? It's just everywhere you turn, there's another crisis here and another crisis there. And I'm afraid the little Dutch boy is running out of fingers to plug all the dikes.
Well, of course, people have to understand that Union Bank of Switzerland is the third largest bank in the world. Certainly the largest is this one, Hong Kong Singapore Bank, HS, I've forgotten what the initials are, but it's the Hong Kong Singapore Bank, and I forgot what the second largest bank in the world is, but certainly the third largest bank in the world is the Union Bank of Switzerland. They're simply hanging on by their fingertips, you know. They're having real problems. They have already lost $40 billion. They got another $70 billion that they're having to watch, and they're probably going to lose that. And then, of course, with this new debacle and more Americans pulling their money out of, and they're talking about $700 billion of American accounts over there. They pull that money out. They've only got about $2 trillion, you know, and, you know, you take out $100 billion here, $100 billion there, pretty soon you're talking about real money.
And you know, Dr. Stan, a year or so ago when this first broke out with these subprime loans and you started seeing these major write-offs and the experts were saying, well, it's going to be $200 billion. And then they said, well, it might be $400 billion. And then they said, well, maybe it's $600 billion. Well, now they're talking $1.6 trillion. And who knows where it'll end. But, you know, is it Everett Dirks who said $1 trillion here and $1 trillion there? Soon you're talking real money.
I know, of course it is.
Was that $1 billion he was talking?
He was talking $1 billion. No, there's been a lot of inflation since the days of Everett Dirks.
Right.
But, of course, I think people have to understand that the whole economic system is teetering on the verge of collapse. Our financial system is on the verge of collapse, and that's why the Fed is doing everything wrong, at least as far as trying to preserve the value of the dollar. They're simply churning out money at a phenomenal rate, the M3, which, of course, they refuse to reveal to the American people. But the M3 is running about 17 to 18% a year, which is going to reflect the rate of inflation 6 months to a year from now. Current inflation is between 12 and 12.5%. The consumer price index is going up. The producer price index is going up. And even with all their efforts to cover that up, you're talking about 6 or 7%. And you know that they're cooking the figures on that. The prices are far higher than that. If you go to the store and you look at the price of food, I mean, they've tripled the cost of corn and soybeans, and by tripling the cost of corn and soybeans, they've driven up the price of hogs. They've driven up the price of beef. They've driven up the cost of chickens and of eggs. And, of course, in fact, recently, down in the southern part of this country, where, of course, they had large fish farms, and they were growing catfish, and they were doing great. But the price of soybean meal and of cornmeal has gone up so high, they've just simply had to shut down the catfish growing, and they're going to have to be grown in other countries. They cannot afford to do that here in the United States any longer because of the soaring costs. And everything has consequences. And it really all came about in the United States because, of course, we wanted energy independence. And instead, of course, allowing The drilling of oil up off the north slope of Alaska, where there's far more oil than there is in all of Saudi Arabia, or the development of the Bakken oil field in Montana and the Dakotas, that has about twice as much oil, almost twice as much as they have in all of Saudi Arabia, or the development of the shale oil, which has three times as much as they have in Saudi Arabia, and that is Colorado and Utah. Why, first, instead of doing what was logical, allowing offshore drilling at Anwar, certainly massive amounts of oil in all those places, what they have done, mandate that we use ethanol, which has driven up the price of corn. And instead of making ethanol from sugar cane or from sugar beets or something of that sort, why, of course, they're using the corn and driving up the cost of this basic essential food product all across the world. And people are going to starve throughout the world because of American congressional policy mandating the use of ethanol. Our guest has been Ron Brown, and we've been talking about what's going on financially. We are on the edge of the greatest economic crisis our nation has ever seen, no question at all about it. And we're going to be back in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program. And, of course, hopefully you're going to begin to make your preparations for the difficult times that lie ahead. Well, Ron, go right ahead.
Okay, Dr. Stan, you know, we've been talking about these failing institutions, whether it was Merrill Lynch or Countrywide or Ford and Citibank and UBS. You realize UBS stock a year ago was trading around $67, $68 a share. And just this past week, it got down as low as 18. So if you took all these brokerage firms and look at what has happened to their stocks, and then you start asking the question, how many pension plans and state investment funds around the country are investing in these very same stocks? And you know an awful lot of them are. So if we think the pension plans were in bad shape a year or 2 years ago, then they must be in horrendous shape today. I think you're going to start to see defaults on all sorts of municipal bonds as the tax base of all the municipalities implodes as people lose their jobs and the economy gets slower. So it's just we're on that precipice, ready to go into the greatest economic crisis that any of us have seen in this country. I personally believe it's going to make the 29 Depression look like a picnic, because in this depression they're going to change the whole monetary system. We will lose our system of government, the constitutional republic, a government of law that has given the greatest prosperity and freedom in the history of the world, and yet not one American in 100 even realizes they're about to lose it. So it's a sad state of affairs. We just hope we can wake up enough people to protect themselves and to get involved and turn the tide and get us back to this constitutional republic and back to the values that made our country great.
Well, you know, Ron, I really think it's exciting that we do have a voice at this time. And I was just counting up our outlets that we have now. We have over, I think 63 different outlets every single week across America. And I think we're reaching more and more people. I don't know how many of them are listening, but I have a feeling that an awful lot of them, at least those people who listen to our programs, are beginning to make preparations for the difficult times that lie ahead. And it's simply not simply getting gold and silver, but certainly, getting your home secure, your debts paid off, certainly laying in food and medical supplies, and then, of course, hopefully, you're developing a close personal relationship and dependence on our Lord, which is the only thing that's going to get us through the very, very difficult times that lie ahead, because behind everything going on are powerful spiritual forces, and anybody who doesn't believe that needs to get the pamphlet we offer entitled The Workings of the Spiritual Hierarchy. Ron, it's always a pleasure. We'll look forward to talking to you real soon. Thanks so very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me again, Dr. Stan.
Good night. God bless. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and certainly our guest is Ron Brown. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have any questions at all about what's going on, let me suggest that you get our talk on the financial tsunami. It comes with a syllabus, but it will give you tremendous insight into what is really going on behind the scenes today. It's a talk we gave a couple of years ago, but nothing has changed. everything we talked about is coming to pass today. We have a little pamphlet called The History of Money, and you have to understand there's nothing new about what's going on today. It happened in ancient Greece. It happened in ancient Rome. It happened in Venice. It happened in Florence. It happened in the Weimar Republic. It happened at the time of the American Revolution. It happened at the time of the French Revolution. It happened in 1703 under John Law in France, where they had this wonderful idea that they could create prosperity by printing money. There's nothing new under the sun other than the fact that Alan Greenspan understood the history of what had happened in the past, and he intentionally and purposely precipitated the problem we have today. Why did he do it? Well, we have a little pamphlet called The Financial Meltdown, and it's a compilation of five of our newsletters. We hope you'll want to get it. I have a theory, I don't know whether I'm right or not, as to why Alan Greenspan did what he did, but he is either the greatest villain or the greatest hero of all time. Only history and God know the answer to which position is correct. Under any circumstances, let me suggest the book. The Creature from Jekyll Island is certainly the best book. It's written by our good friend Ed Griffin. It explains you the history of money. It explains how everything in America is built upon debt. There is no inherent value to our currency. It's all built upon debt. And then, of course, we carry the book, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, by Professor Sutton. And certainly he did a wonderful job of laying out the fact that the Federal Reserve System is the greatest scam of all time. It was created by the bankers, for the bankers, to enrich the bankers. And, boy, they're sure doing a good job and looking after their own as they destroy the value of our savings and of our, certainly of our currency and of our pension funds and of our insurance policies and of our annuities and of our CDs and our bank accounts. They know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to know. Or they'd rise up and demand these people be tried for treason because they've betrayed their reason for being, and that is to protect the value of our currency. And so you need to read The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, because it is a conspiracy. And then there's a little pamphlet we have. Well, I shouldn't say pamphlet. It's a small book called Fiat Money Inflation in France, which tells what happened in France following the revolution of 1789, as they came up with a unique idea of actually creating money and using the land that they had stolen from the Catholic Church as security for the money they were creating, and how they created a wonderful and prosperous society for a time. And then, of course, as the economy began to slow down, they had to print more money to keep it going. And then as it began to slow down, they had to print more money. We've recently seen, of course, the Bush administration sending out checks, $100 billion in checks to the American people to try to stimulate the economy. And then, of course, they spend another $50 billion to corporations to encourage them, either in tax breaks or other things, cost $150 billion. And, well, that's kept us going right up till about the middle of July, but now the economy is beginning to sag again, because it doesn't matter how much money you pour out. When you're, of course, in an inflationary spiral, why, of course, fighting inflation with money is like fighting a fire with gasoline. Understand we are on the verge of terrible economic times, and understand behind everything are powerful spiritual forces. We have a new DVD. It's called Secret Knowledge. That's Secret Knowledge. And, of course, it gives you much of the same material, but only from a different perspective that we have in the Forbidden Secret. There's a syllabus that goes with Forbidden Secret, just as there's a syllabus that goes with our planned police state. A talk, you need to get this. Our number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Please go to our website, radioliberty.com. Look up the area on other videos. Fascinating material, but everything there is fascinating. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of William Grigg, who's certainly one of our favorite guests and talkers. And, of course, as you know, he was formerly senior editor of the New American Magazine, and now he works with the Welch Foundation. He's a regular contributor to their blog site and runs their blog site and has his own blog site. But he's also heard here regularly at Radio Liberty. And so without further ado, William, how are you tonight, and what are we going to talk about?
Always. I appreciate the opportunity. We have to talk about the economy. We have to talk about the consummation of these decades of perverse fraud that have been inflicted upon not only the United States, but the world by the Federal Reserve, and what that's doing to our standard of living, and the fact that we've reached the terminus of this whole process, or at least we can see the terminus from here. We've passed, to use one of the colorful expressions that has been in the blogosphere this week, we've really passed the event horizon leading to the black hole. You know, a black hole is this astrophysical construct that's the result of an explosion of a star in a supernova, and it creates this super dense mass that, in theory in any case, who can test this theory, I don't know, tears a hole literally in the fabric of space-time and creates a gravity well so intense and so steep that nothing, not even light, can escape. And the point of no return is called the event horizon. And some of the financial writers have been saying that we've reached the event horizon, we're falling into a black hole. I think that that's not an exaggeration. And you can see indications, of course, if you follow the markets, particularly the fate of the financials and the discussions on Capitol Hill regarding the impending bailout of Fannie and Freddie, followed probably by the big three automakers and the airlines. There's reason to believe that within 4 or 5 years, the airlines as they exist right now will no longer exist. So deep is their destitution. But you can also see the unfolding financial crisis and little anecdotal experiences. Yesterday, for instance, my family and I went to a local amusement park over in Boise, actually a little suburb of Boise, not a little one, but a suburb called Meridian. And while we were there, I was waiting in line for one of the attractions, and there was a young mother with a couple of children standing next to me who looked like she was probably of African ancestry, but much to my surprise, she was speaking in Dutch. And I assumed, and I asked her, and it turned out I was right, that she was from Suriname, which is a little country sort of on the eastern limb of the top of South America between two Guianas. It was settled by the Dutch. She emigrated from Suriname to the Netherlands, and of course she uses euro, as well as, I think, the guilders, the Dutch guilders. But she is just one of many people who have come over to the United States to take advantage of the exchange rate. It would now become everybody's favorite holiday destination over in Europe because the euro is doing so much better than the dollar. Of course, the Canadian loonie, the Canadian dollar, is doing better than the American dollar. It's the first time in over 25 years that's been the case. The Mexican peso is doing very well. It's not doing better than the dollar, but it's gaining value on the dollar, which is one of the reasons why, just a week and a half or so ago, we saw this amazing spectacle of real estate developers in Texas holding trade and sales shows in Texas, inviting Mexican businessmen to come across the border and start buying property in the United States. These were Spanish-language trade shows that were conducted in several communities in Texas that were staged for the specific purpose of attracting investors from Mexico who are doing relatively better than their counterparts across the border in Texas, interesting them in coming over and buying land in Texas, which, well, of course...
I think it's so interesting that Abu Dhabi has recently bought the Chrysler building.
Yeah.
Abu Dhabi has bought the GM building.
Mm-hmm.
America's up for sale, and people from all over the world are coming here to buy it.
Yeah, it's very much a buyer's market right now for the United States. And they're buying up all these assets because, of course, they no longer have any confidence in the dollar. People are not interested in any. They're not as interested. There's still some interest, but not nearly as much, and not as much as would be required to maintain our current standard of living on the part of foreign investors in buying treasury bonds and other securities of that sort, precisely because there's a very good reason to think that our whole financial system is falling apart, which is why Barclays Bank and I'm trying to remember the name of the Dutch bank just within the last week or so, a couple of weeks, has been talking about pulling all their assets out of the dollar, which is an intelligent course of action. But if you take a look at the course of the valuation of the dollar since America, in fact, went bankrupt. We went bankrupt in everything but name in August of 1971 when we were taken off the gold standard entirely by Richard Nixon. That was an act of repudiation. Was saying to the world that you can no longer... use dollars in order to purchase gold to redeem our debts that we had incurred through the Great Society and the Vietnam War. That essentially drove us into bankruptcy and everything but name. And within a few years, because of the machinations of Henry Kissinger and certain elements in Saudi Arabia, there was a new mechanism established, which was the petrodollar. That's my theory in any case, is that the petrodollar entente between Kissinger and the Saudi royal family, where basically we gave them everything they wanted in exchange for their agreement to accept dollars in exchange for petroleum as the leading member of the OPEC cartel. I believe that's essentially what's kept the dollar afloat for this last generation or so. But eventually, of course, you have to have a reckoning, and things have gone so far downhill so quickly in terms of what the Federal Reserve has done to the subjective value of the dollar, that not even the Saudis are willing to prop this up anymore. The Kuwaitis, of course, a year ago decided that they were going to get out of the dollar. That's gratitude for you. The Kuwaiti emir and his gang, they're sort of like a miniature version of the Saudis. You know, the Kuwaiti regime is sort of the Saudi regime's mini-me, if you will. But they were restored to their throne in 1991 through the intervention of the United States and its coalition partners to the United Nations, thanks to George Bush the Elder. And now, of course, they're one of the first countries, one of the first regimes in the region to abandon the dollar. And things are getting so dicey that in Saudi Arabia, they're starting to feel the effects of inflation in Saudi Arabia. Now, of course, that doesn't affect the, I don't know how many hundreds of Saudi princes there
are. Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William is just saying that countries throughout the world are beginning to abandon the dollar. Kuwait has abandoned the dollar. Certain of the countries over there in the Persian Gulf are abandoning the dollar. Certainly Venezuela, Iran abandoning the dollar. Russia certainly is doing the best that they can. They would like to have, of course, all business transactions mediated in their form of currency. So, but of course, and even Saudi Arabia now is beginning to look a little askance at the dollars because they're losing value so rapidly. Why would you want to sell gold, oil, which has real value, for a paper currency that's losing its value, that's lost over 40% of its value in the last couple of years? So pick up that story.
That's exactly what Ahmadinejad said over in Iran. And of course, Ahmadinejad is many things, most of them contemptible, but one thing he's not is stupid. And a few months ago, he made the comment that it makes no sense. I believe it was at the OPEC summit earlier this year that it makes no sense to be selling petroleum, which, of course, is the most highly sought commodity in the world right now, in exchange for something that is intrinsically worthless, meaning the dollar, whether you're talking about the garishly decorated scraps of paper or the ones and zeros in digital form that are actually the most common form of so-called dollars in the world. There's no intrinsic value there, whereas petroleum, of course, is highly valuable. So why are we giving something of value, of great value, for something of no value? And, of course, that's the kind of talk that Saddam Hussein was engaged in before the most recent invasion and occupation of Iraq and the destruction of Saddam's regime, Saddam having been a very faithful subcontractor for Washington and double-dipping for Moscow in the same capacity for a number of decades. And there are many people, Karen Kwiatkowski, the former, I believe, lieutenant colonel, she was an intelligence analyst at the Pentagon. She was lieutenant colonel there. She is of the opinion that what really drove the invasion of Iraq was the possibility that Iraq would do what Iran has subsequently done, which was to say set up an oil burst or an oil exchange market in which they would accept something other than dollars for petroleum, whether it be euro or yen or yuan renminbi or whatever currency would be on offer. It would be anything other than dollars. And that, of course, would help to undermine this critical petrodollar relationship that has essentially kept the dollar afloat now since it was severed from gold in August of 1971. I'm sure that played a role. I don't know how big of a role it would have been, but it stands to reason that that would be something that would preoccupy the people who are the keepers of that accord. The same thing, of course, as you pointed out, Dr. Stan, with Venezuela and Hugo Chavez, who's in that case, after a fashion, he's a Fidel Castro wannabe. Why anybody would want to be Fidel Castro eludes my understanding, but he, of course, is somebody who has that aspiration, and he's been busily socializing that economy in many ways. And because they have huge petroleum assets, and they're in very good stead with a number of very bad regimes, you've got somebody in Hugo Chavez, who's a rising power within OPEC, who's looked upon by Washington as a threat. He, of course, is a terrible ruler, as most of these people are. But when he talks about the valueless status of the dollar, Hugo Chavez is telling the truth, that the dollar is worth nothing. And so we've created our own problem here. We've really inflicted this situation on ourselves by permitting our government and its allies, this quasi-governmental agency called the Federal Reserve, to create this state of affairs where our currency is worth less than anything. It's worth less, literally worth less than the paper it's printed on. The paper it's printed on is something of value. The dollar itself, of course, is simply an instrument of debt maintained by force and fraud. But there's the other aspect of the story which got some exposure this last week when Dr. Ron Paul, the congressional representative from Texas, God bless that man, once again got in the face of Ben Bernanke, the commissar of the Federal Reserve, and said in so many words, you are basically the biggest taxer in the world. Because inflation, the creation of spurious currency, that is to say, undermining the value of currency, the subjective value of the dollar by printing more of it, is thereby stealing value from those who earn money and try to save it. That's the biggest tax in the world, and you're the biggest tax in the country, to which a rather nonplussed Ben Bernanke replied, quote, Congressman, I couldn't agree with you more that inflation is a tax. So you've got this man admitting, Bernanke admitting, that he's in the business of taxing. But it's not just taxing the United States. This is something that very few people have ever thought of. Because we live in a world where the dollar is the reserve currency, the default reserve currency of the world, and because the dollar basically is sort of the bedrock of this world system of fiat currency, everywhere we export dollars, we're exporting not only inflation, but we're exporting taxation. Inflation and taxation are the same thing. And, of course, these other countries are all being taxed without representation. Everywhere the dollar is used as the reserve currency by a government, where you have a dollar peg and the central banks have to maintain that peg to a dollar, those central bankers are acting as satellites to the Federal Reserve. They're acting as taxation agents for the Federal Reserve. By what right do they go about taxing these other countries, stealing the wealth of these other countries through inflation? That's the system that's in existence right now. People are rebelling against it. It's really, if you look at it, a tax rebellion that's going on that is helping to drive down the value of the dollar from our perspective because people are fleeing the dollar because they no longer want to pay this spurious tax called U.S. inflation.
But you know, of course, William, I think one of the significant things is inflation is just sweeping across the world because of America's policies. We have exported inflation. We've exported it over to the to Saudi Arabia and the Arab Emirates. And I mean, over there, they're talking about 10 to 15% inflation. And suddenly, we've exported it to China. They're having 8 to 10% inflation. The same thing to India. American policy flooding the world with dollars, which, of course, are used as currency throughout the world, or have been in the past, is creating this tremendous inflation, and the only way these people can get rid of it is to cut their peg to the dollar and simply get their money out of dollars. Otherwise, countries throughout the world will lose what they've worked so very hard for, and the seed corn of their people. And my fear is that one of these days, all these trillions of dollars that exist throughout the world are going to come flooding back into this country and just devastate what little remains of the value of our currency and really impoverish our people and simply do away, eliminate the middle class.
You can look upon this as sort of like a tidal function. And I know exactly what you're talking about, Dr. Stan, because if we were to see a reciprocal wave of dollar inflation come back to the United States, we would be reduced below third world status. Literally, if you take a look at Zimbabwe right now, that's the type of a scenario we're talking about, where literally you've got people who export paper to Zimbabwe, some of these, I believe, German firms that are in the business of exporting paper that is used to print the Zimbabwean dollar, no longer willing to export that paper to Zimbabwe because they've got inflation running at something like 28 million percent annually. I mean, literally, they cannot print the banknotes fast enough over in Zimbabwe for them to retain any value at all. And the foreign suppliers of the paper used to put out this fiat currency are no longer providing the paper to do so. I don't know what's going to happen in Zimbabwe, but Zimbabwe, of course, is plumbing new depths of human ugliness with every passing week.
And, of course, we can thank the Chinese communists and the Chinese communists, the Russian communists, blocked efforts to put sanctions on Rhodesia because communist China is actually keeping Mugabe in power. They're providing military forces over there. They're providing munitions and weapons for Mugabe's, ruthless army, which is terrorizing the people. And, of course, what the United States should do is say, we're not sending out anybody over to the Olympics. I mean, unless you go along with the sanctions on Rhodesia and getting rid of Mugabe, but we wouldn't do that.
Oh, no.
That would be gentlemanly. And so we are backing the people who are backing Mugabe, who, of course, has made mockery of this idea of elections and democracy in the country, that we forced to accept Mugabe back in 1980. The United States installed Mugabe. And look at the end result of that, what's gone on there. I sometimes wonder if maybe that was just a trial run for what lies ahead for America.
Well, I've often thought that the people who are running things, not just the United States, but running the system that is basically sort of the spinal column of this informal world government that exists, if they use countries like the former Rhodesia, and now, of course, it's called Zimbabwe, or perhaps Iran or Cuba or North Korea as little laboratories, I honestly think that from time to time these people, this numinous them who seem to believe that it is their power and privilege and destiny to define our lives for us, if from time to time their malignant gaze falls upon some poor hapless country and they say, I wonder what would happen if we would use this country in order to test this approach to social engineering. That would make a lot of sense. I mean, in terms of Zimbabwe, you've got, of course, a perverse experiment in unprecedented hyperinflation. I think perhaps they want to find out just how bad things can really get if all restraints are removed and the government can hyperinflate the currency as far as it possibly can. Of course, you can do so infinitely. At some point, the economy simply falls apart and nothing is left. I mean, you reduce this society into some kind of pre-Cambrian ooze. That seems to be the direction they're going in Zimbabwe. They'll never run out of zeros, and assuming that they get another source of stock to print the worthless currency, they'll keep doing it. But I wonder if from time to time perhaps we see these countries being selected as involuntary specimens in some kind of perverse lab experiment being run by the world's social engineers. I think that would explain a lot.
Well, let me remind you, and I don't know you're aware of it, but when David Rockefeller visited communist China back in the early 1970s, he wrote an article that appeared in the New York Times, I think it was August 15th, 1973, where he said, the social experiment in China, under the directorship of Chairman Mao, is one of the most important and significant in history. The social experiment in China is one of the most significant and important in history. By that time, they'd killed about 100 million people.
Yeah.
But that didn't seem to bother David Rockefeller because, you see, he's different. He has a different outlook. He has no compassion for human suffering. The social experiment in China is one of the most important and significant and successful in history. We'll be right back here in just a moment with William Grigg as we begin evaluating what's happening Are we simply a social experiment? We'll go right ahead there.
Yeah,
with
the people you're talking about, Dr. Stan, once again have arrogated to themselves the privilege of planning our futures for us on the assumption that we're either incapable of doing so or certainly unworthy of being permitted to do so. And David Rockefeller is a perfect specimen of that type of person, the type of individual D.K. Chesterton wrote about in the, I believe he called them the New Lords. They look at us with cold, dead, alien eyes. They're completely abstracted from any sense of fellow feeling with us because whereas we're people, they're persons, and it's a difference in status. The idea that each of them is individually significant enough to be protected and to be allowed to explore his or her talents and to pursue his or her interests, whereas the undifferentiated mass of the people, the hoi polloi, the commoners, people of our sort, we are the objects to be acted upon rather than those who are to be permitted to take individual action. I think that's the way that they look at the world. That's certainly how they treat people like the Chinese and like the people in Rhodesia and Cubans and the North Koreans and the Iranians and those poor hapless individuals. I mean, bear in mind, once again, we too often forget that we're talking about individual human beings. When we talk about 60 million people or 100 million people being killed by respectively Stalin or Mao and their henchmen in the Soviet Union or in China, you're not just talking about human beings being killed en masse. You're not just talking about this blank, faceless, nameless aggregation of human beings. You're talking about 100 million or 60 million individuals, each of whom was created in the image of God and given talents and given gifts. Each of them had a family. Each of them had a mother and a father. Each of them had people who were important. Each of them had something to contribute to the world. There's no such thing as a human being who is incapable of changing the world for the better if given the opportunity to do so and given proper instruction as to how to bring out that potential. And so you had 100, between Stalin and Mao, just to use the commonly accepted figures, 160 million individual tragedies where 160 million individual worlds were brought to an end as part of a social experiment. And it was a social experiment being conducted not merely by the domestic despots in China and in the Soviet Union, but also one in which the people who run our own government were complicit, deeply complicit in some instances. It's a source of tremendous shame to me to think that the government that rules us was instrumental in bringing to power mass murders of that magnitude and sustaining them for as long as it did. And it's still in that business. I mean, you talked a segment ago about the fact that the butchers in Beijing and the murderers in Moscow who still back the Zimbabwean regime of Robert Mugabe are implicitly and in many instances overtly aided by Washington. And, of course, you mentioned the fact that it was Foggy Bottom, our State Department, and its corresponding numbers across the pond over in London, who helped bring down Ian Smith's regime in Rhodesia, which, imperfect as it was certainly a Western, pro-Western, limited government model of administering a society.
And where there was no apartheid, where there was no racial discrimination, where the people got along well, the blacks and the white prospered, and blacks who had the ability were getting ahead and getting property. But, of course, that had to be destroyed. This wasn't what they wanted. They didn't want a wonderful society that was able to export food throughout Africa. They wanted a country embraced with famine, and that's what they had. This is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is William Greig, and pick up the story there, William.
You talk about what happened with Rhodesia and the fact that that government was one in which there was a remarkable degree of amity among people of different racial backgrounds, and the fact that unlike most places in Africa, most of the time you had indigenous black Africans actually making social progress, and they were exporting food, and they had a middle-class standard of living that was not racially defined in Rhodesia. And the thing that I've often thought, having visited Africa and having gone to school with a lot of people from Africa, is that the powers that be simply don't want that model to be in existence anywhere in that continent. They wanted to keep that continent free of an actual successful market capitalism model where you had a limited government and constitutional means of limiting power, and you have the ability for people to own property and to improve their property and transmit their property to their heirs. They don't want that model to take root anywhere in Africa. I honestly believe that one of the main objectives of foreign policy over the last 50 or 60 years, if you take a look at what's been going on with respect to Africa since at least 1961 in the secession of Katanga from Congo, when the United Nations intervened and eventually killed Moise Tshombe a few years after the intervention and installed Jonas Savimbi. Not Jonas Savimbi, for heaven's sake. I'm getting my African...
Mobutu.
Mobutu, yeah. but before Mobutu, I'm trying to remember the fellow who was before Mobutu.
His name was Patrice Lumumba.
Patrice Lumumba, yeah, there we go.
All right.
But installing Patrice Lumumba before Mobutu there in Congo, one of the objectives in getting rid of Moise Tshombe, who was a Christian pro-Western constitutionalist in his outlook, was they didn't want that model to take root anywhere in Africa. And, of course, when you saw what happened with South Africa, once again, another country that had a mix of white and black and Asian populations where they did have apartheid, but they were trying to find some way of growing out of apartheid, as the United States has been trying to grow out of certain racial institutions that unfortunately were encumbrances upon our constitutional system. Of course, that was something that was squashed in the late 80s and early 90s. And now you have in the African National Congress-dominated South Africa a model which is far more congenial, I think, to the people who are trying to ensure that Africa ends up being ruled by some species of tribalist socialism. And once again, this reflects, I think, the fundamental malice of the people who are running things, because I honestly believe that given the opportunity, countries like Rhodesia, South Africa, Katanga, after it withdrawn from Patrice Lumumba's communist-dominated Congo in 1960-1961, if they'd been given an opportunity by virtue of their example and by virtue of their economic progress over the decades, they could have radically transformed that entire continent, which, of course, is a resource-rich continent full of people who know how to work, and just like people everywhere, they have the ability to develop their gifts and talents and make social progress, make contributions to the world. It's just amazing to think how different Africa would be today if you had three or four little outposts of Christian-style civilization that were creating an economic and a political revolution on behalf of freedom and individual rights in Africa. It would have been a wonderful thing, and of course that was nipped in the bud a number of decades ago, and that work still goes on today. And that's, of course, this is the handiwork of the same people who are involved in propounding and propagating and propping up this system of fraud that is all rooted in the Federal Reserve, which I'm beginning to think really is the fountainhead of all evil here, because you've got, once again, a central bank with satellite central banks taxing the world through inflation, using this as a means of promoting all of these policies we're talking about. You know, the root of all this all has to do with the ability of the Federal Reserve to be promoting this, either by providing the monetization for policies out of Washington that have to do with foreign aid, you know, foreign aid being used to prop up corrupt thugs all across the world, every continent you can imagine, or whether it involves direct bribes to countries, whether it involves funding the initiatives of the United Nations. All these things have their roots in the Federal Reserve System. And we're finally starting to catch the hell that we've been sowing for a number of decades. You know, we've sown the wind, we're reaping the whirlwind. And my hope, and I don't know if it's a forlorn hope, I don't know if it will prove to be a fruitful hope, is that once we start to feel the consequences of what our government has been doing, we've been insulated from them for far too long, once we start feeling the pain, the penury that we've inflicted on so many other countries, that people will be driven first to their knees and then be driven to a useful, focused rage that will promote the cleansing of the inner vessel. And that's what the Lord says. You have to cleanse the inner vessel first.
Well, hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with William Grigg. And I certainly agree that probably the best thing that's going to happen is the coming economic collapse. Perhaps Americans will realize what's important. aware of the doctors. Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. And, Chris, really one of the interesting things is that we've had a wonderful run with the fiat money system. We've seen unparalleled prosperity here in the United States. The majority of our people have benefited, and even people throughout the world have benefited, you know, as we've inflated, as we've exported inflation. But the problem is that now, of course, we're coming to the end of that run. Through the last several decades, the United States has been using the financial and the military power of the United States to bring about a world government, to destroy any world leaders who didn't want to go along with this. And I'm talking about Frank assassination. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't read the book, The Confessions of an Economic Hitman, or certainly we have a four-tape set of my interviews with the author of The Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and we certainly recommend that to you. He tells you openly how they simply would assassinate people who didn't go along with it. He explains the invasion of Iraq is simply because Saddam Hussein wouldn't take orders from Washington, D.C. We have to understand now that this whole thing is coming to an end, because when they destroy the American financial system, why, we will either have a chance to regain our freedom or to lose it completely. So with that as a thought, you pick up the story, William.
Every time we talk about Mr. Perkins and the Confessions of an Economic Hitman, which is a tremendous book, one of the series that he's been putting out on the secret history of what he calls the American Empire, I'm reminded of a couple of things. The first of which is a conversation I had with him right after the book came out. He was very busy, and I could only talk to him briefly while he was in a car shuttling him to the airport on his way to another speaking engagement. He spoke with me by cell phone. I reminded him of something. Actually, I didn't remind him. I told him about something that had once been said by Robert Welch, who was the founder of the John Birch Society, way back in 1979, when everybody else was talking about the Soviets and the awful things the Soviets were doing. And, of course, they were doing awful things at the time. The Soviets are always the Soviets. That was their role. They were cast in that role by the people who run the world. They were in charge of doing awful things. Robert Welch went to the heart of the matter in a speech he gave, I believe, in Denver, Colorado, when he talked about how in the next little while, he didn't specify the time horizon, whether it was 5 years or 10 or 15. He said, the United States, which had been the most cordially admired country because of practicing the virtue of minding our own business, would become the most universally hated country because of our rulers' continued practice of imperialism by the dollar as the substitute for the sword. He's saying that in 1979, that was a remarkable thing for somebody perceived as a conservative to be saying at the time. You know, Robert Welch was an anti-communist. He was opposed to all forms of collectivism.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with William Grigg. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, William has just talked about a speech that Robert Welch had given back in 1979, where he talked about American imperialism through the dollar, the use of the dollar to bring other countries of the world under our control. And certainly this is the story that John Perkins had told in his book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and, of course, a book which we carry that's The Secret History of the American Empire. The Secret History of the American Empire, we have several four-tape sets, I believe, with John Perkins, at least one I know. We recommend them to you. But certainly Robert Welch was saying this in 1979, that the dollar would be used to bring about imperialism, and it really is. This is why, of course, we have our troops in 130 nations throughout the world. Why are our troops there? Because we dominate. We control those countries. Why do we have 720 foreign bases? Because the major thrust of American foreign policy, and we can't, of course, tell the American people, but the major thrust of American foreign policy is imperialism. We want to bring about a world government, and we want to force all governments to go along, because you can't have a world government if there's even one nation that has the courage to stand against you. The world idea of a world government would fail, and so all governments will be forced under the control of the new world regime that we're bringing in place, and the world military, and the world court, and the world taxation, and the world police force. And go right ahead, William.
That's exactly right. And what I thought was interesting and provocative about what Robert Welch said way back in 1979 was, first of all, that he was saying that if you wanted to know what the real problem is, you have to look to Washington. It's not that Moscow, or at the time as we called it, Peking, or any of the other foreign capitals dominated by communists, as bad as those regimes were, it's not that they were the focus of evil, as Ronald Reagan was to say in 1983, is that Washington was the active generator of all these problems. And he was speaking with specific reference to the problem of terrorism, which, of course, in 1978, was still considered something of a novelty here in the United States. And he was saying that if you understand how it works, you know, terrorism is one of the things that is generated or is manipulated or exploited by the people who are behind this mechanism of imperialism by the dollar. And so I talked to John Perkins about that, and I mentioned that speech to him, and he chuckled and he said, I would never have thought that I would ever find myself agreeing wholeheartedly with something said by Robert Welch, but that's exactly what it is. He's talking about this mechanism whereby you have people who are economic hitmen whose business it would be to get the governments of various developing countries or third world countries deeply in debt, so deeply in debt and so intractably in debt that eventually the World Bank, the IMF, would be able to take over their natural resource base and take over their governing system so as to make them satellites of this world order. But the other thing that I was reminded of when I read John Perkins' book was a conversation I had with Barbara Connival, who is the former head of the World Bank. I think I mentioned it before on this program, back in January 1995 at an economic development conference. The International Development Conference, IDC, in Washington. This is shortly after the Republican conquest of the House of Representatives in 1994. And it was a huge meeting of lobbyists for the United Nations, the World Bank, the IMF, the entire foreign service and foreign aid apparatus of the United States. And they were gathered there in John Perkins was talking about. We have, of course, a spectrum of alternatives. Talking about bribery, targeted assassination, and bombing. And all this is done, once again, in order to enhance the power of the regime operating out of Washington and New York with like-minded people in London and some of the capitals, not only the capital of the emerging European superstate, but you can see people in Moscow and Beijing and Tokyo and Riyadh and elsewhere in the world who are part of the same constellation of power. And the thing that I find most interesting about this, you talked a few minutes ago, Dr. Stan, about the fact that no nation who is in the position of resisting is going to be left alone until they are beaten down and made to comply, made to submit. You take a look at what's going on right now with the country of Liechtenstein, which is a tiny country. I mean, it's the size of a county here in Idaho, basically. It's smaller than most counties in terms of the population. In terms of the geography, it's the size of middling city here in the United States. It still has a nominal monarchy as its form of government. And just in the last couple of days, we've seen Carl Levin, and Norm Coleman in the Senate, the Democrat and Republican in the Senate Committee on Investigations, beating up on Liechtenstein because of their banking secrecy laws, on account of the fact that many Americans, many of these so-called super-rich Americans, are making use of confidential bank accounts in Liechtenstein as a way of, quote-unquote, evading taxes. And there was a disgruntled German employee of the Bank of Liechtenstein who got a hold of confidential information that was protected by law in that country regarding the deposits and account information of a number of American depositors. And he took that and he provided that to authorities in Britain and in the United States. And by doing so, of course, he broke the law. And the law he broke is a legitimate law. He stole proprietary information. He violated contracts. He violated an unemployment contract, but he also violated the contracts of the legitimate businessmen and depositors who'd made those deposits at the Bank of Liechtenstein. And he'd done so for, from what I understand, reasons of simple spite, because of his relationship with the management there at that bank. So he'd committed crimes in the country of Liechtenstein for which he should be prosecuted and, if found guilty, go to prison. But instead he was taken into protective custody by officials from the United States, I believe, working through either their colleagues in Britain or the OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development in Europe. They're all involved in this. And he was the key witness here in these Senate hearings that have been held over the last couple of days about the supposedly scandalous phenomenon of banking secrecy in not only Liechtenstein but in Switzerland. You've got sovereign governments here, the government of Switzerland and the government of Liechtenstein, who were called before the Senate Investigative Subcommittee as if they were somehow under the jurisdiction of the government in Washington. And Washington was demanding that they change their laws in order to accommodate the investigative desires of the Treasury Department and the IRS. Now, that's the sort of thing that an empire would do in terms of dealing with its vassals and its satraps. The other thing that I find really interesting here, Dr. Stan, is they're talking, if you take a look at the coverage of this, all the news coverage talks about these super-rich people who dare to make use of banking secrecy and foundations in order to protect their wealth. How dare these people set up these foundations in Liechtenstein that can protect their assets from the scrutiny of the IRS and use those foundations to provide their protected wealth to their offspring? How dare they do that? Now, you know, that was one of the things that the architects of the Federal Reserve and the whole income tax system did, was they set up tax-exempt foundations for themselves and their heirs in order to protect their wealth, to make sure that it was kept out of the system that would apply to the rest of us.
And I really think the point that you're making is so accurate. Basically, there are two sets of standards, one for the elite and one for the common people. You know, year after year after year, we hear, you know, the wealthy people are not paying any taxes. We've got to have to pass laws so that the wealthy will pay their fair share of taxes. And every time they pass legislation, it costs us more, and there's more and more people are not paying their taxes. We saw this with the alternative minimum tax, of course. That was aimed at the very rich. And now it's going to take more money away from the middle class.
Sure.
What they're doing is lying. They certainly have one standard for the elite, an entirely different standard for the common people. And until people understand that we do have a ruling class, they work closely with one another, they favor one another, they help one another, and then, of course, with their ultimate goal. And what this is really all about is the impoverishment of the people who are not part of the establishment.
Yep, that's exactly what it is. The figure that's been thrown around this week in the press is that there's $1.5 trillion squirreled away in the secret accounts, they're no longer secret accounts, now they're transparent accounts, in Switzerland and Liechtenstein. Well, by lucky hap, the Congress is talking about $1.5 trillion in taxpayer money to bail out Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Now, what are Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac? They're two immensely corrupt government-sponsored entities that were set up by the New Deal back in 1938. Freddie Mac actually achieved independent, quasi-independent status in the 1960s, 1970s. They're staffed at the directorship level by immensely wealthy people who are part of the political elite. The fellow who was running Fannie Mae during a period when it was practicing Enronomics, that is to say, falsifying its books so as to enhance its profits at the expense of doing honest business, when it was conducting fraudulent business that left its shareholders terribly impoverished when their accounting methods were revealed in 2003, Franklin D. Raines was the fellow who was doing all this. During the period of 1998 to 2003 being when his corruption was exposed, he took $52.8 million in bonuses. Now, that's the sort of thing that you would expect to see in a hugely corrupt corporation that has that backing of the United States government. And now we're talking about $1.5 trillion being taken out of the taxpayers' kitty, taken out of the wealth of taxpayers either through taxation or inflation, which is the same thing, to bail out this set of corrupt, politically connected elites while they want to go after people who have been sensible and intelligent and resourceful enough to protect their wealth in Switzerland, in Liechtenstein, for roughly the same amount. The other thing that I find really interesting about this, once again, is if you understand that inflation is a tax, and it is a universal tax because right now the dollar... is the reserve currency of the world... you cannot evade taxes. You cannot avoid taxes. If you use dollars or if you use a currency pegged to the dollar, you're paying taxes. You're paying an inflation tax, which means that it makes no sense to go after people as tax evaders or tax avoiders because they can't avoid it. As long as the Federal Reserve is in operation and as long as people use dollars, they're paying that tax. I mean, the whole system from the very beginning, ab ovo ad infinitum, is corrupt and based on lies and force and fraud. And every once in a while they'll hold a spectacle of this sort as a diversion because people like to see the rich get it in the neck, not understanding that if you're cutting the neck of the rich who made their money honestly, then you're the one actually who's going to be next on the guillotine. And it's the same kind of collectivist political theater that you've seen in every totalitarian or quasi-totalitarian regime from the French Revolution through what's going on in North Korea today. It partakes of the same sensibility and it serves the same purpose, to distract the people, you know, the mob, the demos, from what the ruling elite is doing to make the lives of the people that much more miserable.
Well, of course, you know, one of the most beautiful examples of this is how they got the income tax through. And basically they said, look, there's some people who are making millions of dollars, and there's some people who are so poor, and what we need is an income tax, but it'll never go over 3%. Certainly these people could at least give 1% of all their millions of dollars of income every year to help the poor. That was the means by which they sold the income tax to the American people. Of course, what really was all about was never about the rich. It was all about bringing an income tax so they could begin to monitor everybody in our country and control them, and of course tax the middle class. And what they accomplished that, they said, we're not going to put a limit on it because it would never go over 3%. We're not going to say the limit is 3% because it would go up to 3%. They lied from the very beginning. They falsified the actual ratification of the 16th Amendment. But the 16th Amendment, this idea of a federal income tax, was in violation of the concepts laid out by our founding fathers, who recognized that if you can tax the people, you can control them, and that's why they outlawed an income tax in our federal constitution. They've ratified the constitution illegally. We have an income tax, and it is not aimed at the wealthy. It is aimed at the poor and the middle class. Go right ahead.
And as you point out, it's primarily an instrument of social control, because if you have a government that can inflate the currency, if it can debauch the currency in any amount that it considers necessary in order to carry out its functions, and it does so right now in a manner which is far in excess of what it collects in actual revenues through taxation, if the government can carry out that function, then it doesn't need to have an income tax, because it's stealing the value of what people earn, what people save through inflation. So the actual tax system, I believe, is not set up for the purpose of collecting revenue. It is, as you pointed out, in my opinion, primarily a means of controlling and regimenting and monitoring the public. And and using the instrument of terror, which is the IRS, and using the prospect of ruination and imprisonment to get people to behave in certain ways. I believe that's the real intention here, given the fact that they can simply inflate the currency to carry out whatever errands and collectivism they assign to themselves.
I think you're absolutely right, William. And we're just about at the end of the program here. Our guest has been William Grigg, as always. Of course, William, tell them how they can get your blog.
The easiest way is to go to the homepage of the Welch Foundation, The Right Source. That's www.rightsourceonline.com. At the top of the page, there's a banner ad for my book, Liberty in Eclipse, The War on Terror and the Rise of the Homeland Security State. If you scroll down about a third of the way down the page, look at the left-hand side, there's my photograph. There's a hyperlink you can click to. It will take you to my daily blog, Pro Libertate. Once again, the portal for this is www.rightsourceonline.com.
And believe me, there's a tremendous amount of important information there. You should be getting William's information on a regular basis. And, of course, he'll be back with us again next week, hopefully, God willing. Well, William, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up tonight's program.
Difficult to do that in 3 minutes. I think the things that people should focus on right now, more than anything else, have to do with bringing your lifestyle and your living standards into harmony with what is happening. That means that you're going to have to find ways of living more economically. You're going to have to be more energy austere to begin with. Everything we do begins and ends with energy. That's going to be one of the biggest dislocations in our lifestyle as inflation starts to take hold. I just kind of noticed today that our electric bills are going up by 10%. That's something I can barely afford. Get used to that. That's just the beginning of sorrows. If you have the ability to do so, get your assets into silver and gold. That's my recommendation. You can't go wrong with that because those are going to appreciate as the dollar continues to decline. They simply stand still with their arms crossed, looking contemptuously at fiat currencies as fiat currencies destroy themselves. That's what precious metals do. If you have the ability to do so, see if you can get near family. Family are the type of people who will rally to your side and give you a hand and contribute their strengths in times of severe adversity. People were headed for times of severe adversity. Get near to your family. Get near to friends whom you love and esteem as if they were family. Try to limit what you do in terms of exposing yourself to new consumer debts and consumer exposures. It's just a really difficult time right now to be indulging in things that you don't need. Find out what you need. Don't buy anything other than what you need. Learn to live right now well within your means. Give yourself a considerable margin within that in order to make preparation for the lean years that are coming up. That's advice as old as the story of Joseph of Egypt in the Bible. That's a sensible approach for dealing right now with the times that are coming because it's going to get uglier than we can imagine very soon.
I think you're absolutely right, and I really think, of course, the important thing is that people get in the right relationship with our Lord because
yes.
This is a spiritual battle. There are powerful spiritual forces at work within the financial system. This is what people don't understand. They're within our government, they're within our schools, but they're working within our government and within our churches as well. But once we understand that this is a spiritual battle between the forces of good and the forces of evil, and the forces of evil are currently on the throne, why, it's so much easier to understand what's going on. William, I want to thank you so very much for being with us again.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
And will you be around next week so we can get a call on you again?
I should, God willing.
All right, fine. God bless, and thanks very much.
Take care.
Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, I guess this evening has been William Grigg. I hope you've enjoyed this because I believe he is one of the wisest speakers that we have on our programs regularly, and inflation is designed to impoverish the American people. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you're out there across America and you can in a position to help us, we'd sure love to hear from you. We've got over 60, and I just recounted them. We've got over 60 outlets every single week. We need more, but the more we have, why, the more it costs. So we just want to maintain what we have. And if the Lord brings us the funds to expand, we'll expand. And if not, why, we'll do what we can. Under any circumstances, I think we're very, very fortunate to have a voice at times like this where we can begin to explain to people about what's really going on and tell them about the secret societies and the ancient mystery religions and what is really transpiring today. And, of course, my fear is we're moving rapidly towards a war in the Middle East, and, of course, it's going to come very suddenly. People are not going to realize it, and then it's going to be upon us. But remember, whenever you start a war, you never know how that war is going to end. Begin to make your preparations. Do not put them off. There's no time for just hoping things are going to get better. And then, of course, we want to, of course, remind our listeners that you need to read my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, or get the DVD, and you can watch that up on our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. We hope that many of you out there will want to get the four-tape set we have on the Financial Armageddon, or get the other material on finance, our pamphlet on the history of money, or a pamphlet on the financial meltdown, or the books we carry, The Creature from Jekyll Island, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, Fiat Money Inflation in France, or Professor Sutton's books, Gold for Survival and Gold for Investment. These are important things to know and to understand. But more than that, of course, you need to understand the degree of evil that exists today and how it is coordinated. And so we do hope, for instance, you might want to get one of our new four-tape sets. It's called The Execution of Martin Luther King. Who killed Martin Luther King? Well, it wasn't simply James Earl Ray. He was a patsy, like Lee Harvey Oswald was a patsy. Reverend King was killed by a CIA conspiracy. How can I say that? Well, because there was a trial. Don't you remember when they had that trial? It went on for 4 months. There were 50 witnesses, and the jury that heard the trial declared, and a judge agreed, that the government was 70% responsible for the murder of Martin Luther King. They even had the confession of one of the people who was part of the conspiracy. You remember when that hit the headlines? And of course you don't, because it was totally ignored by the media. Just exactly as the fact that simply 3 days ago, the House of Representatives voted to take a resolution on the impeachment of the President of the United States and sent it to committee to start holding hearings as the first step towards the impeachment of George W. Bush. How could you block out something like that in America? Why, very simply, we have freedom of the press. And the people who own the press, AOL, Time Warner, Bertelsmann, Viacom, Disney, Fox, known 90 to 95% of the media, why, of course, they have the ability to control what you hear, what you read, what you see. They control your reality. If you don't believe that the House of Representatives voted by a vote of 186 to 230 in favor of sending the resolution to committee to begin holding those hearings on the impeachment of the president, we'll be glad to censor the pages out of the congressional record. But an interesting study in thought control is go up on the Internet and try to verify that this is true. And you're going to have a hard time, but if you want to get those pages from the congressional record, you get anything else from us, we'll be glad to send them to you. And this is just 3 days ago. Remember, the media is controlled, ladies and gentlemen. It is controlled by five mega corporations that control 90 to 95% of the major media. And we have people like Rush Limbaugh, who gets $400 million for an eight-year contract, one of the finest conservatives money could buy. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, our webpage, radioliberty.com, radioliberty.com. Please go there. You can watch our videos. You can watch our section on other videos, read our newsletters, listen to our radio programs on a regular basis, tell others about our programs, help us get the truth out while we still can, and then please pray for America. Pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and for our protection. And so, until Monday, may the Lord be with you.